coming up next on your favorite radio station. It's hour one of the Dr. Future Show.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. Ladies and gentlemen, KSCO presents the Dr. Future Show. If you would like to join in our show today, you can call us at 831-479-1080. That's 831-479-1080. And now, your host, Dr. Future.
Happy Future Tuesday and happy Valentine's Day.
Yeah, hope you're having some fun out there, feeling a little romantic, feeling a little special someone in your life that makes you happy, brings you flowers.
And if you get a chance to get outside, you're in Santa Cruz especially, gorgeous day, absolutely incredible day here in Santa Cruz.
Yeah, perfect place to celebrate the sunset on Valentine's Day.
Reminds us of why we moved here. Yeah. It's that kind of day. And I look at my poor friends in Boston and New York and Montreal right now, digging their way out.
That's right. Getting exercise with the snow shovel.
Well, that's it. Exercise. That's a good thing. The yoga of snow shoveling really got into it, but not for a long time. not anymore. Now, I like the ocean. I think that's one of our greatest assets, if you will.
Yeah, between storms, it's really nice. I don't know, during storms, it's a little scary.
So, in this good weather, to help celebrate Valentine's Day, we have a second hour that's looking at the science of love a little bit with Nick Herbert, our Stanford quantum physicist who lives in Santa Cruz here, with August O'Connor. Both of them will be presenting some music as well as some scientific understanding of this stuff.
Oh, I love it. Science and romance. What do these things have in common?
I thought it'd be a good date for that.
Great.
Yeah.
Lovely.
So let's look at some of the Dr. Future news, shall we?
Let's do that.
Okay. Well, there's going to be a very interesting experiment. Maybe I shouldn't call it an experiment. A launch by the Indian Space Agency tomorrow. They're going to be setting a new launch record. They're not just putting a satellite up, but they're launching one rocket that has over 100 satellites on it.
Nanosatellites.
Well, that's what they call them because they're small. 104 satellites on a single rocket.
Wow.
We have a link at the Dr. Future website, drfutureshow.com/links, where you can click on that and you can look at the live launch tomorrow. It'll be Wednesday, 10:58 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Oh, wait a minute. 9:28 local time, Wednesday. 10:28 Eastern Standard Time, Tuesday. Oh, okay. So this actually will be, our time will be 6:58 tonight, Pacific Standard Time. Very interesting. Okay, you can watch that. We have a live link there for you to check out on that.
Okay.
101 nanosatellites, one each from Israel, Kazakhstan, the Netherlands, Switzerland, United Arab Emirates, and 96 from the United States. We have 96 of our machines immigrating into orbit.
So does it tell us what kinds of things we're going to be doing with all these nanosatellites? Are they for communications? Are they science experiments?
Number,
are they life forms?
They're everything. Yeah, it's a whole potpourri of experiments. Of course, lots of them communication, visual studies, looking at the atmosphere. That's always a very popular one. There's a couple that are looking at the stars. Some of them are looking at cluster communication technologies that are possible through rapidly moving microsatellites. Very important stuff for when we have the global internet put in place, where we have low Earth orbit satellites that create a whole grid that just gives us bandwidth wherever we are. Doesn't matter so much location anymore. So that kind of thinking is going into these satellites. Because they're nanosatellites, and there's so many of them, and it's being done in India, it's more affordable. So if you have ideas for space exploration that involve satellites, this is a good time to be alive.
Somehow it makes me think of like all the people riding trains in India, you know? All these satellites riding a rocket to outer space, trying to get out there.
Yeah, and once they get out there, what do you do next?
I don't know.
Yeah, well,
crowd on top. Right above.
You look down. Look where you were. Look what other people are doing.
Right.
Well, you know, as soon as you're out of the atmosphere, any type of telescope works much better.
Absolutely.
Also.
Right.
So you can have a nano telescope. I mean, it's not as good as, you know, the government ones like Hubble, but hey, you know, it's yours. You get to control it.
Sure.
Look at it whatever you want.
Lipstick cameras.
Yes.
They are every bit as good as the big fat lenses.
And if you can have a little 2-pounder package in space, you know, you could put a lot of interesting camera stuff. And we're learning all about that stuff with drones. Drones, the cameras keep getting better and better and better. It's awesome. Amazing.
Yeah. Right.
Now for $1,000, you can have a flying 4K tripod.
That's right. Yeah, the new drone's eye point of view.
Yeah.
And that's everything more interesting.
And that's normal for us. So access to space will be, looks like it's normalizing also.
Oh, boy.
Access to space.
Can't wait.
Yeah.
More views of the big blue marble.
That's it. So anyway, I like that story. That's a good option.
All right. Well, why don't you shuffle your papers and click on your links and we'll take a break and come back with more on the Dr. Future Show. Stay tuned, everybody.
Okay, we're back. And hey, we're playing around with the webcam right now at KSCO Santa Cruz on Facebook. Just go to KSCO Santa Cruz and you'll see a live feed from KSCO Studios. In the second hour, we have our guests.
Yeah, so. And we'll keep an eye looking for comments there or if you want to ask questions.
That's the great advantage of it, texting.
That's right.
You can go on Facebook and text us, ask us a question live, and we'll be able to hopefully answer it for you.
Okay, so search for KSCO Santa Cruz. You'll find us.
Yeah. So, back to the news. Did you know that the Tesla Model 3 will reportedly start pre-production versions in a few weeks?
Oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy.
That's the $35,000
car. That's the affordable one for everybody.
That's right, yeah. Mm-hmm. The Model 3 sedan.
All right.
They're planning to launch the Model 3 later this year. Late, that means like November, December. And they're going to start.
That's ahead of schedule because I thought they weren't coming till 2018.
Yeah. Well, it orders through 2018 for those 373,000 people that put $1,000 down each for one of those.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to start delivering. But before that, they have pre-production models. And that's what's coming out in a few weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a few lucky people that get to drive a production model of the Mod 3.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Those are great looking cars.
Yeah, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
And they expect they won't have the delays that the Model X had. The Model X had suffered a lot of delays because it had a complicated design and a troubled doors, gull wings didn't work properly.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
All those Back to the Future features that are more trouble than they're worth, huh?
Well, people had to wait for them. Let's put it that way.
Uh-huh.
And hopefully they won't have to wait and wait and wait for this one.
Mm-hmm.
So with the pre-production, they'll be able to start working out the bugs early. Right, so by the time everyone starts to get one at the end of the year, then they'll hopefully it'll be a little more bug-free.
All right, smooth sailing.
Yeah, so I thought that was good news.
All-electric, mostly automatic car.
Yeah.
Your new driving robot.
And back to space for a moment.
Mm-hmm.
NASA had to make some decisions about where the 2020 rover is going to land.
Oh, right.
Remember we had Bruce Damer, Dr. Bruce Damer
was part of that
2 weeks ago.
Gathering of scientists proposing landing sites for the next lunar rover.
We'll have Bruce on soon, but I don't want to let you know that they looked at, down at JPL, just this last weekend, they looked at probably 30 potential landing sites. They narrowed it down to that. And then looked at those 30 and narrowed it down to 3.
The 30 most interesting places on Mars to take your drive-in rover to.
And one of the things they want to do with the 2020 rover is to look for life.
Oh.
You know, and where do you go for life on Mars? Where's the hottest spot for life? Where's the nightclub?
Where's the nightclub? Where's the ocean? You got to find the beach.
Yeah.
Spring break on Mars.
Well, there's three candidates. Candidate 1, 2, and 3. Candidate 1 is in the Columbia Hills in the Gusev Crater. There's evidence there used to be a hot mineral spring.
Oh, and leave it to JPL to find the the spa first.
Yeah. Well, the hot mineral spring, well, that's where Bruce believes that life may have arisen, not from the deep oceans, but from a hot mineral spring on the land.
That's right.
And so looking for them on Mars is natural.
And a bubbling little warm pool where life hung out and grew and became a colony until it grew into us.
Well, originated even. Originated. Here on Mars, we don't have to worry about the origination part. We just need to find evidence of something that might have lived on Mars.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. You know,
didn't something. Have to originate there. Maybe it's something landed there.
Well, maybe it came from somewhere else before that, but any evidence, any DNA evidence especially, would be profound. Mm-hmm. You know, it would really tell us about origin of life in the solar system, and maybe it hopscotched around. Maybe it was on Mars first, then came to Earth. There have been a number of meteorites found on Earth, Antarctica, I believe, where there is evidence of Martian rocks.
In Antarctica.
So showing that we've had rocks here that have landed, you know, largely because of cataclysmic events that happened.
Mm-hmm. Right. Some Mars, meteor hit Mars and knocked a big space rock off, and then that
bounced over to here.
Bounced off and came to Earth.
Yeah. And I could be wrong on this, but I think massive volcanism can also throw a rock into orbit on Mars.
Right. You know. Yeah, that would have to be one powerful volcano.
Yes, it would. It's probably more likely a meteor thing. But anyway, so candidate one is Columbia Hills in the Gusev Crater. Candidate two is known as the Jezero Crater, J-E-Z-E-R-O.
G-Zero.
G-Zero. Mm-hmm. Now, G-Zero also hints at a watery past. They say, quote, more than 3.5 billion years ago, river channels spilled over the crater wall and created a lake.
Hmm.
Kind of like the
opposite. Sounds like the Oroville experiment.
Or the opposite of Oroville.
Spilling over the crater.
And yeah, it created a lake. Yeah, the lake here is spilling out.
Right.
Well, I mean, I guess you could say it's trying to create a bigger lake.
Right.
This could be a prime spot for signs of microbial life that may have survived in wetter times. So there may be some fossilization, perhaps, or something like that. The Jezero Crater.
Cool. Right? That sounds like a worthy destination.
Yeah, it's definitely on the top three list. Mm-hmm. And the third candidate is called Northeast Syrtis, S-Y-R-T-I-S. It's an area that was both wet and warm, mostly due to volcanic activity on Mars.
Okay.
So they're thinking that microbes could have flourished there in liquid water that was in contact with minerals. So any one of these three could result in some kind of evidence of life on Mars, or fascinating discoveries about how it evolved, even perhaps. So their next meeting is that they narrow it down further. Well, we got to 2020. I guess they launch 7 months before, so they got a little time to figure out the best one.
Right. And of course, if you saw The Martian, I wonder if they're thinking about how to leave a supply package for future missions in case we strand any of our Martian astronauts up there.
Right. Yeah, supply package for
survival.
For survival.
In case Matt Damon ends up on Mars again.
Or maybe we'll find out that there is Martian life and it's stressed out because it's been kind of scarce conditions there and they're asking for a care package from us.
There you go. Mars wants Amazon now.
Mars wants us to...
half-hour deliveries.
Yeah. Like water. Send us water.
Right. Well, I understand that they're perfecting the technology of trucking it into Las Vegas by train.
Well, in the Martian case, I wouldn't take it from our planet. I would go to nearby Ceres, the planetoid in the asteroid belt, which has got almost as much, if not more, water than Earth sitting there as a frozen space ball, snowball in space, and just take some of that over to Mars.
Wow.
If we wanted to bring water there. But that would.
The concept of dragging a little bit of water from an abundant planet to a starving planet is mind-boggling.
Well, Ceres would be easier than from Earth. You wouldn't have to overcome the gravity. Yeah, well, that
still sounds hard.
Yeah, it is. But yeah, it's the realm of science fiction right now. But,
yeah, absolutely.
Those of us who have read lots of sci-fi as kids easily think about such stuff.
I mean,
which is
when you think about
good.
Even taking things from the Earth, isn't it just exorbitantly expensive to take even a kilogram of something from Earth out to space?
Well, you got to think about why. You know, why does it cost so much to take something from Earth to Mars? And mostly because of the rocket ride into orbit. That first part takes a huge amount of energy and time and money.
Right.
To get out of the Earth orbit. That's the problem. Mm-hmm. Once you're out there, it's pretty easy just to push around things, like space tugs. As a matter of fact, they've figured out how to do that with satellites just with electricity. They don't even need gas to propel our satellites anymore.
Oh, really? And just do little photon streams?
Yeah, they play with photons. Yeah, slow, but there's lots of sun out there, and it'll get you where you need to go. So space tugging and stuff and moving resources around is going to be big. I'd say that's the solar system.
I guess once you get out into space, you have lots of time.
Business. Well,
because it takes a long time to get anywhere distance. In space.
But it's like the oceans, right? And the oceans were big for our ancestors. Mm-hmm. But here it has different properties in the ocean and probably mostly automated, probably mostly robotic ships, because you're basically floating in zero gravity, zero resistance from winds or anything when you're traveling between planets. And that's a very easy space to navigate, mm-hmm. relative to what we've already done with oceans and airplanes and in the sky here.
Right.
So space is, in that level at least, is pretty straightforward.
Right.
The big problem is us being up there. Humans are subject to radiation problems and boredom. If you're sitting in a ship for 7 months, I mean, even if it's the best ocean liner on the planet, it kind of gets boring, the same 7 restaurants.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The robots, however, don't have a problem with that. Likely to be our first pioneers, if you will. They already are.
Cool.
Fascinating news with Mars. 3 destinations. We'll be keeping you posted on any evolution further there. We'll probably bring Bruce on soon, and he can tell us the particulars of what actually happened at that fateful meeting at JPL.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Okay, well, looks like we're getting ready for
it. So we have another minute?
Yeah, we got another minute.
Okay. I wanted to mention this one thing that was a little concerning. It was about, speaking of JPL, one of their JPL scientists had some problems crossing the border from where he was racing cars, solar-powered cars in Chile.
Mm-hmm.
A guy named Sid Bicanavar is a natural-born U.S. citizen, works at NASA's JPL, prolific traveler. And for some unexplained reasons, he was detained on January 31st and demanded to access his NASA phone, his NASA JPL phone, containing highly sensitive information, but science information.
Mm-hmm.
And they kind of scared him into actually doing it. They gave him a booklet that says that they basically have the right to look at your phone at the border, but the lawyers say that they don't.
Oh, so the Border Patrol just made up some special rules for their own purposes and passed them on to an American citizen. And it just happened to be the day of the Trump decree.
Yeah, well, remember, there's confusion there as to what the level of security is.
Yeah, right.
And so anybody that looked like they might fit Trump's idea of a bad person are stopped.
Yeah.
And even American citizens. Uh-huh. So it's kind of a wide net, if you will. I'm sure it's getting better now.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, this is a pretty disturbing story when you realize how much people are willing to just lockstep. You know, someone gives them a new rule and they just decide, okay, we'll follow it and we'll throw in some of our own, you know. Now,
so he said that they seized his phone, they wouldn't release him until they gave access to the PIN. So it's kind of interesting that here a JPL issued a government phone hacked by another branch of government. So the government's spying on itself here. They have now copying machines where they just copy your phone. They stick your phone. You have to give them your PIN number, and then boom, whatever's in there gets copied.
Wow.
So that's a little upgrade at the border there, if you can call it that.
All right. Well, I guess never expect your data to be secure and love your virtual self because it might get stripped down.
Well, JPL's been running forensics to see exactly what Homeland has taken from their phone and what they looked
at. This is Dr. Future Show. We'll be right back.
Yes, welcome back to the future. As we look at things from our point of view, we notice that the president likes reality television and seems to give free publicity to lots of companies and people.
He really understands media pop.
Yeah, as soon as he mentions somebody's name or whatever, something happens with them.
That's right. That's right. Depending on whether the message is
positive
received
or negative.
Positively or negatively.
But either way, it affects things.
Definitely.
Right? So, you know, being the entrepreneurial culture that we are, it wasn't long before someone invented an app.
There's an app for that?
Yeah, there's an app for this. It's called Trump to Cash.
Trump to Cash.
Yes.
All right. How to profit on President Trump's tweets.
Yeah. Hey, you know, it's all entrepreneurial. In this case, it helps you invest automatically whenever the president mentions a publicly traded company.
Oh, boy. Here they're really getting down on Kellyanne Conway for mentioning publicly traded companies owned by Ivanka. But well, I guess when the president does it, it's a profit opportunity.
It is. It is. Now, with his Twitter feed, when he mentions a company, it can make or break a company with a single mention sometimes. Now, you can easily trade against positive or negative sentiment and make some money in the process.
Oh, boy. Tell us about the link. What is this app
Trump
called?
Trump to Cash, with the Trump. Two being the actual number, two, Trump to Cash. It's a little tongue-in-cheek, but it does work, and it's quite interesting.
Okay. So give us some of the lowdown.
It's a bot written in Python, and it watches Trump's feed and does a sentiment analysis on any tweet mentioning a public company, sentiment being whether it's positive or negative.
There must be a person in there.
A person designed it.
But somebody figuring out the sentiment, like whether
Max Braun. I guess it's a simple AI where it looks at whether or not it's positive or negative.
All right. So it's basically a kind of an automatic like button thumbs up or a thumbs down.
Well, he didn't like that company. Oh, he liked that one.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So then what happens? How do you make money with that information?
Like, is Trump saying no way to Toyota? Short the stock. Is Ford bringing 700 jobs from Mexico because it believes in America?
Invest.
Buy.
Yeah. Well, you better sell the stock of the companies that are leaving Mexico.
Got to get it right.
Right.
You know, whatever's going on, you got to get it right. That's where you got to watch the fake news thing. But that's another app. Go to Tech News did a really nice piece on this, and they have benchmarks of when he mentioned a tweet that was a publicly traded value and what its value was and whether or not it went up or down after the mention. And they show you how you can put some money on them as they come in. And
oh, boy. So yeah. The people who wrote this article in their little straw poll made a virtual $7,000 on their virtual $100,000 investment.
Yeah. That's it. Yeah. 7% to $7,000 on a $100,000 investment. Exactly. Mm-hmm. It's really interesting. So there's an example of American ingenuity at its finest.
There you go. You want to put your thumb on the scale in the stock market casino? Here's an app for you. Trump to Cash.
Trump to Cash. Check it out. Another future thing happening this summer is in Dubai. I thought it was very, very interesting that they're putting autonomous taxi drones in the skies this summer.
Autonomous taxi drones. Wow, right out of the Fifth Element.
It is. The ruling family there thinks that it was a great idea to have more and more journeys going autonomous. And they want to have a quarter of all traffic being autonomous by 2030 there.
All traffic. 2030.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
So it only makes sense.
I guess the kids today are never going to get their driver's licenses.
Why waste your time?
Yeah.
See, even the women won't bother to get the rights to drive because who wants to?
Right. You'll have to get licensed to ride.
Well, driving cars one thing, but do you want to take the time to learn how to fly an airplane? Probably not. Their first one is an EHang model. We've talked about this. I think Greg and Richard mentioned it. It was at CES in January. But the EHang is the first totally autonomous flying cab.
The EHang?
Yeah.
That's what it's called, the EHang?
Yes.
What a name. Who named it? That sounds a little dangerous.
It's Chinese, you know.
You know, Hangman, EHang.
No, I know. They,
I don't think I want to be in a flying car named an EHang.
They're going to put a Dubai sticker on top of it. It should make a difference. We'll see. In Dubai, the Road Authority hopes they'll have them as early as this summer. And with actual drones that people can sit inside without fearing for their lives and go somewhere. able to carry someone up to 220 pounds along with a small suitcase.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. And you don't need to, as I mentioned earlier, you don't need to learn how to fly or anything.
Hmm.
And you can just press a button and take off vertically, fly from point A to B.
Who's making these drones? What drones are these? Oh, that's the company that's making the drones.
E-H-A-N-G. I know, it's a horrible name. I don't know. I hope that doesn't detract from their business. But they have a range of 19 miles. They fly at around 60 miles an hour. And they're on track to take off within months from now.
Wow.
Yeah. Now, what's nice about these is that these can land on roofs and buildings. They can land in relatively small spaces. So they'll be pretty fastly adopted if they work. You know, the main thing is if they work properly. That's a big test with that. So that's something to look forward to. We'll be keeping an eye on that. Another thing to happen through in this summer.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we have to keep an eye on that. It seems like Dubai is really leading the pack in terms of drone vehicles and drone races. And these guys really like being a culture of the future.
Yeah, they do. They do. As I mentioned, that the Dubai's ruler, Sheikh Mohammed bin Rashid Al Maktoum, wants 25% of all passenger journeys in Dubai autonomous.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
By 2030. That's their, when you're someone like him, you can make decrees like that.
Yeah. Boy, maybe he can have some influence on Trump. That would be presidential decree, huh?
He is. They've struck a deal already with Elon.
They did?
They're going to build a Hyperloop there.
Oh, what?
That connects Dubai to Abu Dhabi.
Okay.
A Hyperloop is one of those pneumatic trains that are being tested now.
Wow. So,
by the Hyperloop,
Dubai to Abu Dhabi
SpaceX.
in 30 minutes or less?
I don't know. Whatever the distance between Abu Dhabi and in Dubai, obviously important centers in their part of the world.
Amazing.
And in 2016, they started their first driverless shuttle. It was called the Easy 10. There's a French company called Easy Mile.
Mm-hmm.
And they began running a 700-meter trial route on Mohammed bin Rashid Boulevard.
Mohammed bin Rashid.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Named after him. So I guess he's the futurist in the Middle East from what he's doing in their world. Fascinating, don't you think?
Amazing. Well, I guess it's got to start somewhere. And the thing about Dubai in the desert there, it's a canvas. There's nothing in the way. You can just keep putting new stuff on top of the sand there. So it's a good place to try things that have never been tried before.
That's right. Like sandcastles. You can build stuff there.
Right.
Oh, before the break, I wanted to mention this. There's another project you all can participate in. It's a citizen science program. Or if you're a space cadet, that'll work. Today, a group of researchers at Carnegie Institute of Science released an impressive database of 61,000 Doppler velocity measurements of the 1,600 nearby stars. And they're inviting all of us to look at their data to find the next exoplanet.
Wow, that sounds like a great way to spend a Saturday
night. Find a planet, go forth and become drunk with power.
What do I get to do with it if I find it?
You can name it after you, I guess. What do you do when you find a planet? I think the rules haven't fully been made up there yet. They collected this data, and there's too much information for the scientists to deal with. So they're looking at how to spread the wealth, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And it was collected at the Keck Observatory in Hawaii using what's called the high-resolution Escheel spectrometer, high-res. They collect data from 1994 to 2008. A whole bunch of data on all these 1,600 star systems.
Hmm. It would be a very special date to go through all that data together.
Yeah. They started collecting data on this before they actually started doing exoplanet investigations. That came
just the foreplay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It looks fascinating. It looks to me like they are using the Doppler shift, slight changes in the star's velocity, to deduce gravitational tug of an exoplanet. And so far, the team that started with the data, they've already found 100 exoplanets using this high-res data, showing that it actually works.
Mm-hmm.
And one that's actually a planet orbiting the fourth closest star to our solar system.
Which is?
GJ-411.
Wow, catchy name.
Yeah, I know. They really need help with the names here. So anyway, this will be in the Astronomical Journal coming up next issue.
All right.
They hope to bring in lots of fresh new ideas, too, and eyeballs with this star program.
All right. Fresh new ideas coming at you with a few little words from our sponsors, and then we'll be back with the Dr. Future Show.
Okay, welcome back to the future. Boy, we've been going through the stories pretty fast here. The Exoplanet Discovery Program, I think, is really interesting. Go to our links there if you want to participate in that and help discover planets. If you find one, you know, that could be your 15 minutes of
your
fame right there.
Your claim to fame.
Only be more permanent, right? When you name a planet after you, it's kind of like it's better than a road sign.
Boy, but just don't start naming your kids BJ411.
Why not? I mean, that might be cyborg. Or I'll help my cyborg kids and my, you know, bio kids.
I would think a kid with that name would feel very stigmatized.
You think?
Yeah.
By who? The humans?
Yeah. Yeah. The other kids in the classroom.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to do one more piece that's a little controversial. It's in the news today. I'm sure all of you have seen this. You thought it was interesting, too. It's that article about PewDiePie.
Oh, yeah.
PewDiePie.
Boy.
PewDiePie.
The rise and fame of YouTube stars.
Yeah.
Or the rise and fall, really.
Yeah, this is a guy. This is a Swedish YouTuber. He makes videos, really crazy-ass
videos.
Right,
yeah. Until yesterday, he was supposedly the highest paid YouTube star on the board.
53 million subscribers to his YouTube channel. Biggest star on the site.
Right.
By far.
Right. Okay. He gets a lot of Google ad revenues for all those eyeballs.
And then all of a sudden, Disney is cutting all ties with him, and YouTube is canceling his show.
Canceling?
Yeah.
Oh, boy. He crossed the line. See, there is censorship on the internet. Even though he can cuss, he can say all the 7 bad words, but what did he do?
Well, I have the link to the page from the Wall Street Journal article on it. You can check it out. It's a scene where he's sitting there in his little studio, and he's hired these guys from some third world country to entertain him. They laugh, the Laughing Brothers or something like that. And he has them laughing hysterically. And while they're laughing, they pull out this sign and hold it above them that says, "Death to all Jews."
Which is really lame.
Yeah. And it just like shocked him. He acted shocked himself in the video looking at this. But that was not enough to
I wouldn't say he acted shocked. I mean, what I saw, he acted like
he was faking
sort of
shocked.
Fake giggle.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh my. So anyway, he followed up with a lot of comments that did not seem very appropriate. They seemed rather scary, actually.
That caused Disney and such to look more closely at his videos. And they saw that he had made anti-Semitic jokes and showed some Nazi imagery in 9 videos. And so this was a setback in terms of persuading advertisers.
So they don't just care about eyeballs, huh? Mm-hmm. They actually want to know what the guy's saying all of a sudden.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, so that's an interesting controversy. If you look at your news feed today, you'll see that that's there. And I want to mention that because it shows you want to know what's real news. That's real news.
Right, that 52 million subscribers will not be subjected to Disney advertising.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's it.
Well, the rules are all different now. Who knows what they are?
Yeah. So be careful what you say, even on YouTube.
Free speech can be rather expensive.
Don't you think?
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of the real future of this stuff, Tim Cook has been pushing the boundaries of what's possible over at Apple. And actually, he hasn't been able to talk about a lot of this stuff because Apple, as you know, is very, very secret.
Hush, hush.
Company, yes.
Mm-hmm. And, black box.
But what seems to be happening and what's coming out is, if you look at Tim and what he has enthusiasm for, it's not virtual reality, but it's augmented reality.
Oh, right. Yeah, according to some folks in the field, the difference between augmented and virtual is that virtual is augmented with the reality closed off. You know, it's basically blacked out. So all you get is the augmented. That's virtual. But augmented reality, you keep your glasses on, you see the real world, and you add the computer enhanced to objects. It's a continuum.
That's right. It's a continuum. It's like a VR is a subset of AR.
Right.
Because VR is an AR set on opaque mode.
Yeah, VR is AR in a cave.
Yeah. So with AR, you have the whole, you can do all the VR stuff. Plus, you can then combine it with this world, this reality. And so that there's a seamless intertwining of this reality with virtual reality.
Yeah. But they have two different purposes, two different flavors. You know, the VR world is definitely a controlled world where the art is completely in the control of the artist. Mm-hmm. And it's put there with a lot of intention and a lot of direction on how you are supposed to experience it. Whereas the AR world is going more in the direction of how to present information that can help you navigate the real world better. And so its intention is to be very enhancing of reality.
Yeah, yeah, like maps. And, mm-hmm. and or if you want to know about somebody, just click on them and you get all their bio, their Facebook page. Everything becomes much more dynamic. That was kind of the dream of Google Glass when it first came out, that everything becomes clickable in the universe and you have access to whatever you're curious about.
Right.
What a world. How far that's come from being excited about getting a set of Merit Students Encyclopedia as a kid.
Yeah, right.
No, amazing.
The whole encyclopedia on a tiny little disc.
Everything's available to you right now.
That's right. Those of us who grew up with like a big shelf full of kids' encyclopedias can really appreciate what a breakthrough that was. And now we're talking about our virtual human self, the human that is comprised of all the data that we collect about ourselves, and then that being, that entity, having a life in the virtual worlds and being able to participate in virtual worlds, share virtual data, collect information from other virtual entities.
The list is endless.
Yeah.
Here's the exciting thing from Tim Cook. He says, quote, "I'm excited about augmented reality because unlike virtual reality, which closes the world out, AR allows individuals to be present in the world, but hopefully allows an improvement on what's happening presently."
He's an optimist.
That's kind of what we're talking about.
Sure.
Most people don't want to lock themselves out from the world for a long period of time. And today, you can't do that because you get sick from it. Because VR, anybody who's tried the lenses, after about 20 minutes or so, you feel a little nauseous.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it is a big problem. And that's what Oculus is supposed to be famous for helping to solve that problem. But still, you can't go beyond half an hour unless you're a serious cyborg.
Yeah, well, your senses are intimately woven. You can't just separate your eyeballs from what your body is feeling without something going askew.
Yeah, yeah. But with AR, you can, as Tim Cook says, not be engrossed in something, but have it be part of your world, of your current conversation that you're having with someone.
Mm.
He says, that has resonance. That is what has resonance. It doesn't take you out of the world. It brings you more into it. It's just that the world becomes
as
richer.
As somebody who grew up in Las Vegas, I can tell you, it sounds to me like the opposite of what my aesthetic sensibilities desire. Like, I desire a world that has less distractions and that has more zen to it, more spaciousness, more minimalism, more emptiness.
Yeah, well, we have that.
And augmentation is sort of more like going into a casino where like every object has lights and bells and is trying to get your attention.
Yeah, I know what you mean. You don't want to be overwhelmed and you want to be able to adjust the interface so that it suits you. You have to have good preferences.
Right.
The way of choosing your preferences.
Right. You know? Exactly. I'm much more at the flower level of interaction. It's like if I see something beautiful, I want to go smell it, and I want it to be beckoning to me, but not in my face.
No. You know? It's important to know what you love and bring that to forebear on the whole process.
Right.
And what you choose from love will be much more interesting.
Absolutely.
I think so.
So we have about a minute before we're going to take our mid-show break.
Okay, just to finish on the story, Cook says, the smartphone is for everyone. We don't have to think the smartphone is about a certain demographic or person or country or vertical market. It's for everyone. And he thinks AR will be bigger and huger than that, bigger than having a smartphone.
Sure.
Okay, now let's talk about what's happening in the next hour.
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay. In the studio, we have August O'Connor and Nick Herbert, who are going to treat us to some live Valentine's Day music and tell us some stories about love in Santa Cruz and love in science. It should be really interesting.
All right. And these are a couple of our regular irregulars.
Yes, our regular regulars are
very happy to have them with us today.
Compadres in exploring the universe.
All right. Stay tuned for a little bit of traffic and news and weathers. We've got Dave Michaels standing by to tell you what's going on in the roads and the world outside.
Yay, Dave.
So Dr. Future Show will be back before you know it. This is KSCO Santa Cruz.